What is love? Now, the term what is love was actually the most Googled search term in 2012. And it remains one of the most popular Google searches. It was only beaten in 2013 by what is twerking. In 2014, it was only beaten by what is ALS and what is Ebola. And in 2015, in the what is category, only what is Netflix was more popular. Every year, millions of people are searching for what love is. But what is the answer? Now, we know what the Ebola, Netflix, ALS, and even twerking are. I'm not going to demonstrate that tonight. But what about love? What is love? Now, to help find out, I asked that question on my Facebook, to my friends on Facebook, and it stimulated a lively discussion. The first response was, "Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more." This was, of course, if you're not familiar with the song, was in reference to the 1993 Hathaway song, "What is Love?" Others said, "What is love? My score were I to play Roger Federer in a game of tennis. A bottle of JD and a Big Mac." But someone else shared a quote from The Simpsons, which showed that the question required some clarification. The quote was, "Is that the love of a man for a woman, or the love of a man for a fine Cuban cigar?" And this quote reveals the problem with love. Love is actually extremely difficult to define. What is love? Well, what do you mean? Indeed, love researcher Ellen Burscheid wrote in an essay, Searching for the Meaning of Love, that researchers of love have spent a good deal of time and effort trying to pin down what love is, but no single conception of love has been agreed upon. She laments how the word love has been bandied about more promiscuously than any other word in the English language. And she says, the fact that the word love has many meanings makes it difficult to write even a single sentence that is unassailable and true in all conditions. Of the millions and centillions of sentences written about love, very few can stand alone and still remain true, except for the affirmation, love is a word. Love is a word. So what's love? A word. That's hardly a satisfactory answer, is it, to the millions of people searching on Google. Love has been described as the supreme emotion, yet it's almost impossible to define. Indeed, love is a paradox. It's contradictory things at the same time. It's a feeling, but it's also an action and a motivation. It's about relationship, connection, community, but it can also be for enemies. It's based on the qualities of another, but we can also love the unlovely. It's for the other, sacrificial, selfless, benevolence, but it can also be profoundly selfish. What is love? Our culture's vision of love today has been dramatically influenced by post-Enlightenment romanticism, the philosophical movement which began in the 18th century. Romanticism makes love feelings-based and individualistic. It's about sunsets and waterfalls, Lionel Richie, and candles and romance, you know. If we don't feel something, then it's not authentic or real love. And the assumption that love is a feeling has driven biological anthropologists to understand human feelings of love. And human love feelings are driven by hormones, such as dopamine and norepinephrine. Oh, I can't really pronounce this one, sorry. It's a very long word. So it's norepinephrine, which makes us feel love, these hormones. In her popular work, Why We Love, scientist Helen Fisher describes love not as an emotion, so to speak, but as a motivation system designed to enable suitors to build and maintain an intimate relationship with a preferred mating partner. Love helps us procreate and to raise children. Fisher identifies three stages of love, each driven by different hormones. The first stage, lust, driven by testosterone and estrogen. Then the second stage, romantic attraction, driven by dopamine and that norepinephrine, which I can't really pronounce. So it's easier to read than it is to pronounce. Which is followed by the third stage of attachment, which is attachment to a preferred partner through the hormones of oxytocin and vasopressin. And these chemical changes can all be observed through fMRI scanning. And the fact that we can see the brain light up in different ways when feeling these different elements of love leads some to conclude that love is simply a chemical reaction of the brain that compels animals to breed. And this view of love as chemical reactions in the brain has enormously influenced modern atheism. Atheists today commonly assert that love is nothing more than chemical reactions in the brain. The Richard Dawkins Foundation website posted a YouTube video by SciShow answering the question, what is love? And the video claims that science has a pretty good explanation for it. The video essentially channeled the research of the researcher I mentioned before, of Helen Fisher, by asserting that the best way to understand what love is via brain chemistry. Love is all about the brain. Russell Glasser, who's co-host of the Atheist Experience TV show, agreed and said that the feelings that you feel related to love are exactly no more or no less than what love is. In an online question and answer forum, Quora, most atheists' answers to the question, how do atheists prove love exists, revolved around love being a feeling. You feel it, you can measure it, you can test it, you can see parts of the brain light up on a scan. Love as a feeling is a consistent atheist response to the question of what is love. Now, I can appreciate why they would answer this way, atheists answer this way. This is consistent with the atheist conception of the universe where there is nothing supernatural. Everything is explicable in terms of matter and energy, and where everything can be measured scientifically. Hence, the answer to the question, what is love, becomes chemistry, hormones, neurotransmitters. The feelings that you feel related to love are exactly no more or no less than what love is. Love is simply an emotion that you feel. Yet I believe that this is a reductionistic, inadequate, and impoverished view of love. It's ironic that rational atheism effectively becomes emotional romanticism. Romanticism, waterfall, sunsets, Lionel Richie, was the movement which developed in response to the dry irrationalism of the Enlightenment. Hence, the rationalist has ironically reduced love simply to feelings, whereas the history of philosophy would suggest that humans have conceived of love far more and far more comprehensive, being far more comprehensive. Modern philosopher Simon May, who in his book Love, A History, charts the history of the philosophy of love. He claims that love is ontological rootedness. He says that the concern of love is to find a home for our life and our being. May's concept of what love is goes well beyond feeling nice and wanting to reproduce. In his book, he outlines the trajectory of the philosophical thought on love over the last 2,500 years. He points out how key philosophical thinkers understood love, and their thoughts influence our modern understanding of love. And throughout the history of philosophy of love suggests that humans have conceived of love as far more than just feelings you feel. For example, Plato conceived of love as the desire to possess absolute beauty and goodness. To attain this type of love actually required education and training, knowledge, maturity and virtues which needed to be cultivated in order to ascend the ladder of love. Plato says that sexual desire is at the beginning of the path towards the highest love, but it's not what love is ultimately about. There are higher things. Aristotle makes friendships rather than sexual relationships the supreme form of love. He saw the supreme love as ethical, wishing and doing well to others for their own sake, not merely for the pleasure or gain for oneself. Even Rousseau, an early romantic philosopher living in the 18th century, saw love as more than the general desire which inclines one sex to unite with the other. Whilst feelings were important in his philosophy, I mean, he was a romantic after all, he saw love as being more. He didn't think we'd find fulfillment in mere sexual license driven by our hormones. they didn't know what hormones were in those days, but that was the underlying his philosophy. Now, it's true. We can measure some of the feelings of love through brain chemistry, but to suggest that this is all that love is reductionist. Humans have understood love to be so much more. Furthermore, to say that love is simply brain chemicals or feelings that you feel actually demeans humans and something of our humanity. And this can be demonstrated by asking the question, do animals love? Similar physiological responses to hormonal changes are observed in animals as humans. Indeed, much of Helen Fisher's research involved research and observation into animals, particularly prairie voles. She describes the mating rituals of animals in some way as love. She says that the courtship traits in animals are similar to some characteristics of romantic passion in humans. She concludes that, I think, animals love. Charles Darwin believed that animals fell in love with one another. Now, this conclusion, I think, is unavoidable. If love is simply chemicals in the brain making you feel good, animals have the same chemicals as humans, and hence when they react, it's love. Yet I'm not entirely convinced that it's the same. For example, Fisher shares about the persistence of a male giraffe who follows a female around for hours until she finally submits to his overtures. Now, is this love? Well, the giraffe is certainly acting based on chemicals in his brain, but I think if we saw this happen in a human context, we wouldn't call this love. We'd call this stalking. Animal love is primarily about copulation and reproduction. Hence, I'm not sure that this is an entirely satisfactory, exhaustive definition of love. Many believe that love is greater than this. Moreover, there's little selflessness about this kind of love. Animals serve others so that they can copulate with them. Love is the slave to the hormones in their brain. Well, the two are actually made equivalent. Within this conception of love, a feeling that we can measure, love becomes completely selfish because kindness is no longer love unless I feel something. If the dopamine levels in my body change. When love is simply a feeling, then it's no longer about others. It's about myself. Many of the paradoxes we observe and accept in love, which I outlined before, are eliminated in this reductionist conception. Love can no longer be selfless or altruistic because it's a feeling that I feel. Love can no longer be an action because it's a feeling that I feel and that I can measure. Ironically, within this scientistic, atheistic, reductionistic conception, love is undermined. The very concept of love is undermined. The selfless becomes selfish, the benevolence becomes benefit, and the service becomes sex. Love becomes self-contradictory. Now, if this is a total explanation for what love is, and it utterly fails to be useful aside from procreation, it certainly becomes a useless basis for our relationships or for marriage. Based on this view, influenced by romanticism and accepted almost unquestioningly by our culture, marriages now break up when the love is gone, and some marriage vows now promise to have and to hold for as long as we both shall love. Viewing love this way completely fails. For example, consider the marriage of Madonna to film director Guy Ritchie. They were married for 8 years and they divorced in 2008. Now, Madonna said about the reasons for the divorce, she said, when you start off, everything's great and lovely, and the person you've married is flawless, and you're flawless. Then time goes by, you share a life, you have children, and there are cracks in the veneer. It's not as romantic as it used to be. You think, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, and how much am I willing to sacrifice? If love is simply a feeling, then why should I sacrifice anything? It's not love if it's not romantic. Love becomes selfish. After her divorce, Madonna even pondered if true love even existed. If love is simply and only a feeling, then when the feeling disappears, then so do relationships. Love in this conception is not about sacrifice. It's profoundly selfish. As atheist philosopher Alain de Botton says, romanticism, the assertion that love is simply a feeling, has been a disaster for our relationships. Now, I don't want to dispute the science. There's no question that the work of Helen Fisher is very valuable and important. There's certainly a connection between our brains and the feelings of love. But to suggest that this is what love is reductionist. Is this all love is? Given that love becomes entirely selfish and connected to simply to reproduction, the quote from The Simpsons throws a problem. What is love? Well, is that the love of a man for a woman, or the love of a man for a fine Cuban cigar? Chemistry would say that it's the love of a man for a woman, but the feelings or whatever we feel towards a fine Cuban cigar is not actually love. And does this mean that I can't love my mother, my friends, my family, my children? I can't love nature, the world around me. I can't love my country. I can't love a fine Cuban cigar or a bottle of JD. Hence, modern science doesn't answer the question as neatly or as simply as some atheists would suggest or like. The move to describe love in observable chemical reactions is understandable. In a materialistic conception of the universe, things required to be observed in order for them to be real. Yet love cannot be simply reduced to mere emotions. Love can be given and received without a corresponding change in dopamine levels. This explanation for what love is reductionist, inadequate, and impoverished. And I think that we'd agree that love is more than simply the feelings that you feel. Hence, the argument to explain love becomes a challenge to the atheist. The atheist has a problem in trying to provide a complete and comprehensive account for love. The atheist struggles to define or account for the existence of love. Now, this is where I'm going to get a little bit controversial. I want to claim that love coheres more rationally within a Christian worldview and not the atheist worldview. I think we'd all agree that love does exist, it's real, but it doesn't have a physical manifestation. One atheist once admitted, love is an abstraction, a label that we put on a set of emotions or frame of mind. It doesn't have physical existence. And I think that this starts to create difficulties for the atheist attempting to account for and explain love. If love doesn't have a physical existence, in what sense then does it exist? Could it be said that it's beyond the natural world? That is, maybe it's supernatural? But this creates problems for the atheist who thinks that it must be natural, who I think also must be naturalist. Because in the atheist conception of reality, everything is explicable in terms of matter and energy. Natural forces. We live in a closed, naturalistic system. Richard Dawkins describes our world as being subject to blind physical forces. Nicole Gaylor, co-founder of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in the US, says that there are no gods, no devils, no angels, no heaven or hell. There is only our natural world. The Atheist Foundation of Australia say on their homepage, "We live in a natural universe with known natural laws." Now, we can understand why primitive cultures believe that invisible beings control what we now call the elements and natural phenomena. With access to factual knowledge, there is now no excuse for believing in gods, fairies, or any supernatural concept. There is now no excuse for believing any supernatural concept. What about love? In the atheist naturalistic account of reality, where does love fit? As I outlined earlier, we can now understand why atheists want to describe love as a feeling that we can observe through fMRI scanning. In that sense, love is described naturalistically, but as we saw, this is inadequate and reductionist. So how can a non-physical reality like love be explained only through physical forces? The atheist may respond by saying, oh, love is a concept. But this merely begs the question, well, what exactly is a concept? Where does a concept exist? Something like a concept is beyond the physical world. And wouldn't something beyond the physical world be supernatural? Philosophically speaking, if matter and energy is all there is, where do non-material things like concepts come from? can concepts be explained in terms of matter and energy? I can accept love being a concept, but it's not explicable. If it's not explicable in terms of matter and energy, then what is it? Now, the argument to explain love is not necessarily an argument for God, but I think it's an argument against naturalism. The argument goes like this. There's 3 points. If naturalism is true, then all experience is explicable in terms of natural chemical processes. The second point, love cannot be reduced to natural chemical processes. And to the conclusion, therefore, naturalism is false. This argument is related to a broader series of philosophical arguments called the argument from reason. A similar argument can be applied to consciousness. What is consciousness? Consciousness is self-awareness, and the presence of consciousness, like love, also presents a problem for the atheist. The challenge for the atheist is, how can consciousness emerge from non-consciousness? That is, how can self-awareness emerge or arise from non-self-aware matter and energy? At present, no scientist has even the foggiest idea. Love doesn't cohere so easily within an atheistic, naturalistic account of the world. If we are the result of blind physical forces and everything can be accounted for in terms of matter and energy, how can non-physical concepts and ideas arise? If the universe doesn't care, as Richard Dawkins suggests, a universe which does not love at all, which just is, a universe which is just indifferent, which is an indifference is the very antithesis of love, how can love emerge? It's like adding 1 plus 1 plus 1 and getting 5. It may be claimed that love has emerged as a useful way for humans to interact, and it, like morality, has developed a survival mechanism. But then again, this makes love simply selfish and instrumental. Love is simply a way for people to survive. The selfless search for perfection and connection becomes illusory, and hence part of the very nature of love is undermined and ultimately contradicted. This is where I believe the Christian conception of reality as a mind-first reality created by a God who is love and who is conscious best coheres with our experience of the world. As the English author and writer C.S. Lewis once said, "I have consciousness, but is it impossible that consciousness could emerge from the action of the unconscious? Therefore, the original being was conscious." Now, I've rephrased Lewis's argument here slightly, perhaps maybe so I can be quoted as profusely and frequently as C.S. Lewis is. But I'll say, this is how I'd rephrase that. I say, I have true love, which is more than feelings and hormones. But it is impossible that true love could emerge from the actions of a universe that doesn't care. Therefore, the original being was love. And now we come to the Christian claim that God is love. Like, would you agree that it would make more sense to explain our experience of the world through appreciating that God is love is a better lens to which to view our human experience, rather than blind physical forces? So the Christian claim is that the original being God is love, but what does that even mean? The claim was actually asserted and written down 2,000 years ago by a man named John. He claimed to have seen, heard, and touched God himself. And he wrote a little letter, which you can find in the Bible, actually, called 1 John, where he claimed that God is love. And this means that more than God is the source of love, even though that is the Bible's claim, the Bible claims that God is the source of love because God is love in his very essence. God is powerful, rational, wise, knowing, eternal. But the one word, the supreme principle that John uses to describe God, is love. It's not simply a quality that God possesses, it's a statement of his essence and his being. This is at the heart of the Christian God, and when we look at this, we see something very profound and very beautiful. We see the inner constitution of God. To declare God is love is to confess that God is Trinitarian, three persons united in love. A triunity or trinity. Because of the very nature of God, there is a continuous outpouring of love, communication, and oneness, because God is a relational community. This is love because within the Trinity there is intimacy, commitment, passion, community, service, and connection. There is mutual indwelling, a perfect circle of love, light, and holiness. a relationship that embodies and defines the very nature of love. Our culture's conception of love as a feeling is fickle and impoverished by comparison. So what is love? Well, the Christian would answer God. Interestingly, this is very different to the Islamic conception of God, where God is power. It's not love. And the response to him is then, in Islamic circles, is to submit. And in fact, the word Muslim means one who submits. It's very different with the Christian conception of love, of God, which is, in his essence, is love. Now, to assert that God is love is all well and good, but talk is cheap. To show someone you love them, you demonstrate it. And the same biblical author, John, in the fourth chapter of his book, describes how God shows his love. He says, "This is how God showed his love amongst us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins." Now, I'm not sure if you realize, but the way that God has demonstrated his love to us is actually a love story. Where a perfect lover, one who embodies a perfect circle of light and love, seeks a relationship with us, who by comparison are dirty strangers, imperfect people who are inadequate to be in the presence of such magnificent holiness and light, the very embodiment of love. And this creates a problem like all love stories, a problem that creates conflict and tension. We can't enter this magnificent circle of light and love because we're unworthy. And if we're to enter this circle of light and love, we must be pure. We must be forgiven. And this problem is so serious that even Google can't solve it. I heard recently about some of the plans that Google have for the next 15 years or so, and some of their plans are truly amazing. Plan to put someone on Mars, send people to Mars, try to cure cancer, and to develop X-ray vision. Someone then asked, "Oh, is there anything that Google can't do?" And interestingly, the chairman of Google, Eric Schmidt, responded by saying, "Well, we're not about to invent an app to teach people to be more forgiving. The only thing that Google can't do is bring forgiveness." Hence, the story of love between us and God, the beauty and the beasts reach a critical climax, the need for forgiveness. And this is resolved through the love of God. Fully aware of our failures, our selfishness, our pride, our inconstancy and our fickleness, the lover sends Jesus as a sacrifice. In contrast to lovers who die for their beloveds or for soldiers who die for their comrades or their country, God demonstrates his supreme love for us by dying for his enemies. Not just his enemies, but his creatures. Something which could have been his science project, but God entered his project, loved his creation. This isn't just hormones acting. This is a clear and decisive action. God doesn't look over wrongdoing. That would make him unjust. He sent his one and only Son as a sacrifice for us. And this is how the love of God is most fully expressed, by providing forgiveness for our sins so that we can be united with God. It brings the only thing that Google can't do. It's the way a perfect and holy God of love can be reconciled with and forgive selfish, imperfect people like us. The atonement, this is called the atonement, is one of the reasons that I'm a Christian, because of its beauty. Through Jesus' death, God is still punishing sin and at the same time still loving by bringing forgiveness. And the end result of love stories is that everyone lives happily ever after. And believers are united with God in this beautiful, perfect circle of love, now washed clean. The goal of God's demonstration of his love is for our benefit, for us to overcome the fleetingness and the impermanence of this life, and to receive the extravagant gift of eternal life and life to the full. Talk is cheap, but God demonstrates his love in this most amazing love story. This is love, not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. So what is love? The Christian view provides a definition and demonstration of love. God is love, and he demonstrates this through Jesus' sacrificial death on the cross. Whereas the atheist conception of love is an emotion caused by hormones intent on us reproducing is impoverished, inadequate, contradictory, and unlivable. Our experience and expectations of love do not cohere within an atheistic worldview. Hence I contend, for your consideration, that the supreme emotion is best comprehended and understood not within a matter-first conception of reality where we are a mindless accident at the end of a process of indifferent and unguided forces. The universe doesn't care. Instead, love better coheres within the Christian mind-first conception of reality where love has role, meaning and place in a universe created by the God who is love. The original being was love. Thank you.